So we're talking about the Ramchal tonight. The Ramchal lived most of his life in Italy. Certainly was born in Italy. Certainly associated with Italy. Was born in around 1707, very early 1700s. Died in 1747. Died around at the age of 40, 39. The Italian community was a very well-educated, enlightened community. And the Ramchal received an education that was, first of all, obviously a very high-level Torah education, but he also received a classic education, including secular subjects, mathematics, sciences. The Ramchal was one of these Eloi personalities. At the age of 17, he published his first sefer on Hebrew language and on different modes of speech that appear in Tanakh. And immediately when you see this sefer, Lashon Limudim, you see right away that he has a complete dominance over Tanakh at this age. And it was known already by the age of 19-20 that he was a master of Nigla and Nister, Halacha, Shas, Poskim, but also Nigla, Zohar, Arizal. In his very, very early 20s, when he was 21, 22, in his very, very early 20s, he was still relatively unknown outside of Italy. But within Italy, he was very slowly getting a following of people who came to learn by him. He writes about Giluyim that he had, revelations of a Maggid, of some type of angel that would speak with him and teach him. He would record the lessons. Commented to somebody on Friday night that there's a letter from one of his Talmidim that speaks about how he would be in the middle of a conversation and he would just like collapse onto the table and just be out for like half an hour or whatever. Then he would wake up and just start writing ferociously. And so at a very young age, he's having these Giluyim. He's writing about Giluyim that he's having. He's teaching in a very, very small groups Kabbalah. And slowly, and this was a group of B'nai Aliyah, people who were themselves big Talmidei Chachamim, who were learning with him, older than him, and they accepted upon themselves that the Talmidim write about certain Kabbalahs that they took upon themselves in terms of pious behavior. It was a special group. You know, we spoke about Hasidei Ashkenaz, just Lahavdil, but, Lahavdil because the Ramchal writes against some of the practices that we saw mentioned by the Hasidei Ashkenaz, about the rolling in the snow. But the Ramchal forms a small group of B'nai Aliyah. He's teaching them Kabbalah, and eventually word starts to get out, and his personality creates a tremendous controversy. Now, first of all, there's a historical background that we have to know why it caused and stirred such a controversy. We have to remember that in the mid-1600s, was a very, it was a time of crisis for the Jewish community because of Shabtai Tzvi. Shabtai Tzvi was a young, charismatic, brilliant person who was also very knowledgeable in Torah and Nigla and Nister, and he slowly also formed a following at a very young age. Some estimates are that over 50% of the Jewish community really believed that he was Mashiach. And selling their properties, getting ready to move to Eretz Yisrael. And it was a very heavily Kabbalistic movement. And sure enough, with his imprisonment and eventual conversion to Islam, those hopes were dashed. And there was tremendous depression and it was a real time of mashber. It was a crisis for the Jewish community. And it followed with a whole period of witch hunting, almost, of trying to find who secret Sabbateans were, shot from the word Shabtai Tzvi, people who were really secretly following him, thinking that he even needed to do this. This was all part of the process, and he was really still going to come back and be Mashiach. So it was a crazy time, and that's a very important historical background that we have to know. Because again, now we're having a Kabbalistic, young, charismatic person. In addition to that, we have to remember that he's secularly educated, which for some of the Rabbanim, not necessarily in Italy, but in other countries, this is something of suspect because it wasn't part of their curriculum. In Italy, it was part of the Frum curriculum, but in other countries, it wasn't. He also isn't married at this age. He also didn't have a beard, which, again, we're all looking around the room like none of us have beards. But I don't know if he shaved or if he used powder, but he... No, I don't mean like he wasn't able to grow a beard. He wore a clean face, whether he used he obviously didn't use an electric razor, whether he used scissors or whether he used some type of powder that they use that burns off the hair. But he didn't have a beard. Eventually, he did get married, and he had one child. But so here we have a young, charismatic person, secularly educated, no beard. Which again, no beard in an age where every rabbi has a beard. There's no such thing as a rabbi without a beard. Certainly not a Kabbalistic rabbi without a beard. And right, Kabbalah about the beard, of course, 100%. He doesn't have a beard. And he has this small group that are like, quote unquote, they're obsessed with him. And he's teaching them all these Kabbalistic things. They're accepting things upon themselves. We understand why there was suspicion. And we're not going to get into all the details of the controversy. His farm were confiscated. We lost them. They were destroyed. He himself had accepted upon himself that he would stop teaching Kabbalah. And eventually, probably because of all of the turmoil, he leaves Italy and he moves to Amsterdam. He becomes a gem cutter there. He works with diamonds, a gem cutter. He has a livelihood that supports himself. And on the side, he's able to learn as a private citizen. He's able to learn. Eventually, he has I'm sure his whole life, but eventually he acts on a tremendous desire to go to Eretz Yisrael, and he dies in Eretz Yisrael, in Akko, I believe, in the port city of Akko in northern Israel. This is the Ramchal's life. I believe he died from a plague, actually, that was ravaging the country at the time. In only 39 years, the Ramchal managed to somehow have one of the greatest influences of any Jewish thinker ever on Machshava. His works are classics in all groups. Litvish, Hasidim, Modern Orthodox, whatever group you want to pick. The Ramchal Sfarim are the classic Sfarim in Machshav. When the Gra was born a few years, I don't know, the Gra was like 20 years younger than him. They say that when the Gra got his Sfarim, he immediately went and put on his Big Day Shabbos, because right when he saw the Sfarim, he said, I can't start learning these Sfarim without my Big Day Shabbos on. And he was started to prepare, they say, to go visit Italy or Amsterdam, wherever he was at the time, in order to be Mekabel, the Ramchal, upon himself as his Rebbe. And then when they told him that the Ramchal had already passed away, when he heard this, so he was very upset, and he said that he would have walked all the way to Italy, or we know that he was an Akko at the time, but he would have walked all the way to where the Ramchal was in order to be Makabal upon himself, the Ramchal as his Rebbe. Now, there are dozens and dozens of Sfarim that we have from the Ramchal. Dozens of Sfarim. Many more. He was writing many more Sfarim than years that he lived. In fact, some of his Sfarim that we have dates on them, like he signed the end, Ani, Moshe Chaim Luzado, So like he finishes one in September. And then the next one is like finished in like the next January, like every few months he's putting out Sfarim. Some of his classics are Mesilas Yesharim, which we know is a classic Machshava Sefer, Musar Sefer. If you saw Salanter, the father of the Musar movement, he said all the Musar Sfarim are great, but Mesilas Yesharim is the Musar Sefer. Mesilas Yesharim. Another classic Sefer is Derech Hashem, which is a systematic presentation of many of the Ikarim of the Rambam, the ideas of Hashem's existence and reward and punishment and Hashkacha and what mitzvos are all about. That's Derech Hashem. I myself remember Shana Aleph taking Derech Hashem, leaving it next to my bed and reading one page a night before I went to sleep, finishing it by the end of the year. And I remember it had a very big impact on my own perspective of the world. Das Tvunos is another sefer of his. It's a conversation between the intellect and the soul. Also a discussion about many Ikare Imuna. Is another fascinating sefer called Derech Tvunos. Derech Tvunos is a systematic presentation of how to learn Gemara. He goes through the nature of Gemara disputes and what types of terms are there and what types of arguments are used and how to a systematic approach to how to learn Gemara. Another Sefer, Sefer HaKlalim, is a systematic presentation of the Arizal's Kabbalistic system. As you see, the dominant characteristic in his Sfarim is the organization, and everything he writes is always a systematic approach. Derech Hashem is not just... As soon as you read Derech Hashem, this is why it makes it a little bit of a challenge for guys. People see it sometimes as a little bit dry because it's so organized. He starts with concept one, moves on to concept two, develops. A lot of thought was obviously put into the presentation. It's a very systematic approach. So Derech Hashem is a systematic approach to Hashem, understanding how Hashem runs the world. Masil Sharm is a systematic approach, step by step by step, on Avodas Hashem. All of his Sfarim have this characteristic to it. So I thought it would be appropriate, with the few minutes that we have, to familiarize ourselves with the Ramchal. So we'll read a few passages, some classic passages in some of his Sfarim, to get a little bit of a taste of what his Sfarim are like. So the first piece here is from Derech Hashem. This is a very dominant theme in the Ramchal. The Ramchal tells us that the essence of Hashem is that Hashem is a mativ. Meaning what? He's a thing that wants to give, do good for other people. Hashem created the world in order so that he would have something that he could be native to. He wanted, it's like, I want a kid so that I have somebody I can buy birthday presents for. Hashem created the world in order so that he could do good towards other people. Hinei, tachlis bebriya hi lahetiv mituvo yisparach lezulaso. The purpose of the Bria was that so that he could do good for other people. V'hinei tireh, ki hu levado yisbarach shemo hashleimus amiti. Now, what is the ultimate good that he's going to give to us? We said presents. What presents is he going to give to us? So he says, now realize that Hashem himself is the ultimate shleimus. Hamishulal mikol hachasronos. He has no lacking. V'ein shleimus acher kamohu klal. There's actually nothing as perfect and as complete as Hashem. Anything that you think is really excellence is really not excellence when compared to the excellence of Hashem. Rather, you call it perfection because you're comparing it to something less perfect than it. So you say, like, wow, the steak is perfect. And why do you say that? Because you're comparing it to the rubbery steak that you had yesterday. But today, you have a really nice steak. So this is a perfect steak. But it doesn't mean that it's perfect. It just means in relation to the thing that you ate yesterday. Ach hashleimus behechle, but there's only one thing that is just essentially perfect. And that's only the shleimus of Hashem. V'alkein. V'hiyoso chefzi yisbarach l'haytiv l'zulaso. Since Hashem's purpose was to do what? To do good to somebody else. To be good, to good, do good for us. Lo yaspik lo b'yoso meitiv k'tzas tov. Obviously, it's not logical. If Hashem is the ultimate of everything, and he's the ultimate do-gooder, so it doesn't make sense that he would do good partially. He would only do good with the most extreme and ultimate good. So, Hashem's not going to just run around giving out steaks to everybody, because steak is only good in relation to the bad steak he had yesterday. But it's not ultimate perfection. He wants to give to the brewerim, to those that he created, the ultimate good. And therefore, since we've established that Hashem is the ultimate good, so it makes sense, the only thing that he can give to mankind and it be the ultimate good is for him to give of himself to us. So it's the ultimate do-gooder. The only good he could be doing is giving us him, giving us a chelik of him.
How do you understand the line that Hashem wants it to do good? Hashem wants something and he's lacking something.
So 100%. And anytime we speak about Hashem, we have to always use terms that we're familiar with. Like we say that Hashem hears. Obviously Hashem doesn't hear. There's no such thing as hearing. But that's the only way we can relate to Hashem, like relating to what we're saying, is we say that he hears what we're saying. So also, when we say Hashem wants, we don't mean that Hashem wants. When the Rambam says that Hashem doesn't have a body, he doesn't only say Hashem doesn't have a body. He said he doesn't have a body, and he also has nothing that's associated with physicality. So he doesn't want, He doesn't get angry. What do you mean he doesn't get angry? He always gets angry at Klal Yisrael. Doesn't mean he gets angry. It's just that the only term that we have that's semi-close to capturing how he's relating to us is by saying that he got angry. So again, I don't know what it means Hashem wants to do good. Why does he need to do anything? Because that would imply that he doesn't have it before. Whatever it does for him, whatever doing good does for him. Unless we say that his essence is just that the sun doesn't need to give light. The sun just gives light. Hashem, in his essence, just gives. That's what he is. But still, what does that mean that he wants to give? And what does that mean that he gives? Before he created us, who was he giving to? So, it's true. The Rambam, you should know, the Rambam says we can never say what God is. We can only say what God isn't. We can say Hashem isn't this, Hashem isn't that. We can never say what Hashem is, because we can never relate to the things that he is. So you're right, it's 100% a good question. But we have to use those words, because we have no other words. These are the only words that we have. Yeah.
What does it mean that Hashem gives himself?
So we're going to have to see right now. In other words, he's going to give us an opportunity to develop a relationship with him. V'hinei, mitzad acher, hatov hazeh, i'afshar shiyimtza elabo. On the other hand, since this good can only be found by him, that they can be mizdabeg bo yisbarach, that he makes room for them to be connected to him. Obviously, we agree that we can. Therefore, what is the ultimate purpose of the creation? The ultimate purpose is to create somebody and to create a system where we can get from him. Now, okay, so Hashem should just run around and give out pieces of him to us. Ulam gazra chachmaso shiyos hatov shalem. Hashem also decreed that in order for good to really be ultimately good, for you to have a good X, in order for it to really be yours, what do you need? Roy shiya hanenebo bal hatov ahu. Perish. Mi shiyikna hatov biatzmo. In order for you to really get that good steak, it can't just be that someone gives you the steak. You have to earn the steak, because when you earn it, it's really yours. Right? It's like classic. If you're going to work someplace for the summer, they're never going to say, you say I want to work for free, they don't want you to work for free. They want to pay you. Why? Because if you're working for free, how seriously are you taking it? It's not really even your job. You're just doing a favor. Once you're being paid, so that you're already feeling achrayus. Just using that as a muscle for thinking for a second. When a person is just given something, I give you a car. So, easy come, easy go. You gave me a car, I can get rid of the car. But when you slave and you work, and you are really, you work for the money, and you buy the car yourself, and you pay for the car, so now the car is really yours. Yeah.
Yeah, so like, for example, to the Rambam. So like, I mean, I don't know if he's happy or not, but like, I can still say he had a difficult life. Like, is that enjoying? Like, is that really enjoying? Like, he... You know, I would think would be like one of the strive to be. I mean, but I don't know if we can say he had such an enjoyable life.
So first of all, I don't know if we can say he had an enjoyable life. But he didn't have an enjoyable life, just because he had hardship in his life. Everybody has hardship. We're all young still, so most of us haven't had too much hardship. But some of us, I'm sure, have. Everyone has hardship. Now, you could look at that and say, so that means nobody's happy. Now notice, we haven't even said happy. We said good. A person can have a very hard life. And yet, just to give you an example, there's a famous story. I'm sorry, I don't remember the names, but there's a famous story I saw it in a book once. The two lives pitted against each other. A guy who was loaded, started millions of companies, was very, very successful, seemingly had a perfect life, and ended his life in his office with his revolver that he took out of his pocket, out of his drawer. And another person who had a very hard life and fought his whole life in order to get labor reform in America, in the early years of America, that low-income workers should be given more rights, and he was hung. He was executed for, the government said that he was someone who started a rally that ended up killing somebody, an important official, and he was killed. And as he was being brought to the gallows to be killed, he said, I want everybody to know that I had the best life out of anyone could ever have. Now, we think to ourselves, like, those two stories sound very strange. How could one guy be so, say he had such a great life, he's about to be hung at a very young age, and someone else who seemingly had everything, took his life, seems to have not had a happy life. A person could have a very meaningful life, have a very good life, and even though they endure hardship. The Ramban, I even though you want to venture to say that he didn't have such a great life, I would venture to say that the Ramban, at the end of his life, looked back in his life, and even with all the hardship and all the suffering, felt a tremendous sense of completion, of satisfaction with his life, and a tremendous amount of simcha. Again, if we think of simcha as laughter and as joking around and having a good time, it's that he didn't have simcha. But if we look at simcha as meaning, and we look at happiness as, I remember one of my rabbis once said it the best, when you look at yourself in the mirror in the morning and you say that this is, I'm doing right now exactly what I'm supposed to be doing. This is me in perfection. This is me in doing what I should be doing. That's what true simcha is. So what he says here is that the ultimate good is having this connection with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And the point that we're about to make right now is that this is only really yours, and it's really only a part of you. It's only you if you've earned it. If you've struggled through life and you've made it a part of who you are. And that's why Hashem doesn't just give us a life of Avodas Hashem. This is why everything in the life that we have is always offset with an equally strong force that can pull us away from what we're doing. Because that way we earn it. This is a concept that probably most of us are familiar with, but the Ramchal champions this concept all the time, that everything in life needs to have an opposite force pulling us away. As much as you get a geschmack out of learning, there's got to be an equal force that pulls you away from learning. Because your decision to learn, and your decision to daven, and your decision to get out of bed in the morning, all of those things have to be things that you decided to do. Because that way, when you decide to do it, the kinyan is really a part of you. Okay, this is the very, very beginning of Derech Hashem, the very first paragraphs. Very, very famous stuff. There's another paragraph here where he speaks about Talmud Torah. I'm going to say this one outside in order so that we can do the last one. Outside, and you can take a look at it yourself inside, the Derech Hashem here speaks about how HaKadosh Baruch Hu, now that we've established, remember, it's very organized, now that we've established that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is a meitiv, and He wants to give to us, and that's what He really wants. He really wants us to be able to develop a relationship with Him. That's the ultimate good that we can have in our lives, is to have a real relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So, and just think about what, imagine if tefillah wasn't looked at as something that you got to do every day, but something that you actually look forward to. Just like if I told you that for the next week, you can come to my house three times a day, and my wife is going to prepare for you every morning omelet and rolls, and every lunch there's going to be lasagna and eggplant parmesan and fettuccine alfredo, and then every dinner we're going to have steak and we're going to have chicken cutlets, whatever you want. So you'd look forward very much to dinner and to lunch and to breakfast every day. Almost as much as you probably look forward to lunch right now and dinner right now in the Chadar Ochel. And imagine if that was what tefillah was like. Imagine if when you were walking to shul, just like when you're walking back to the house for that steak, and you're thinking about the steak, and you're thinking about what kind of sauce you're going to put on it, and you're going to cut it into small pieces, you're going to cut it into big pieces. Imagine as you were walking to mincha every day, you were thinking to yourself like, wow, another steak. Another opportunity to connect to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Imagine you were really, really connected, that you felt that way. That made you feel like, wow, I'm really partaking in the ultimate good. So now that we've established, imagine what that type of existence would be like. Now we understand why certain people love davening or want to stay up until 2 o'clock in the morning learning, because it's such an invigorating experience for them. It takes time. But the Ramchal tells us here that because Hashem wanted to give to us, there's a big problem. How do we connect to something that is intangible, ununderstand, something that we can't understand, beyond our understanding, something that's not physical, something that we really have no relationship with? That should be the next question. Okay, I like it. How do I sign up? What do I do? So he tells us that Hashem, in order to give us something physical that we could connect to, so he took one thing and he connected his essence to it. And he said that the more you study this, and the more you understand this, so the more you're understanding and you're studying me, and I'm becoming a part of you. And this is Torah. Torah is something that HaKadosh Baruch Hu You know from the Ramban in this Hakdama to Sefer Bereishis, Moshe, no? The Ramban says that all the Torah, Kulo Shemo Shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the whole Torah is Shemo Shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that Hashem connected His essence to the Torah, and that by studying Torah, you connect to Hashem's essence. That's what you do when you study Torah. And he says here, that even if you don't understand the Torah 100%, even just reading the words of Torah are already a certain minimal relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Obviously, the more you understand, the deeper you understand, the more you're connected to Hashem. And this is why, certainly in certain Hasidic circles, so they just read Tehillim, or they'll just read through Gemara, even if they don't necessarily always understand what it means, but they'll just read through it, the key is very, very quickly, not even knowing what it means, because they believe that every aspect of Torah, every different section, Zroim, Taros, Kodshim, Kabbalah, each of it reflects a certain different aspect of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and the more you know, and the more you study, so the more you are connected to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And that's why they'll read on the Tikkun Leil Shavuos, they'll read through all these psukim and all these Mamari Chazal and sources in Kabbalah. They don't even necessarily understand what they are. But and Sfarim also, they'll read through all these things because they believe that even just the reading it, he says it's very, very basic, the relationship you get to Hashem from just reading things. But the and obviously the more you understand it, so the more you're connecting to Hashem. But even just the basic words are already connected to Hashem on a certain level. Yeah.
Yeah, so I don't doubt that people, you know, who read like this or do things like this, you know, really get like a sense of satisfaction.
We're not talking about sense of satisfaction.
Or even, like, feel like they're connected.
We're not talking about them feeling that connecting. We're saying that the soul connects. Whether they feel it, they might not even feel it. You're coming from the opposite direction. I'm coming from the totally opposite direction. You're saying, I understand that maybe the guy gets a good geschmack when he reads it, but come on, he doesn't know what he's doing. I'm saying the opposite. Even though he gets no geschmack out of it, maybe. He's just reading through the words, he doesn't know what he's reading. But the Ramchal would say that his soul is connecting. He might not be, right, it's like the famous story where the guy comes to his Rebbe and he says that he can't cry over the Beis HaMikdash. He just can't cry, he doesn't feel it. And the Rebbe said back to him, well, you should know that your soul is crying over the Beis HaMikdash. So if you need something to cry about, maybe you should cry about the fact that you're so distant from your own soul. You don't even know what your soul is crying about. So, okay, go ahead now. No, okay, fine.
So this Torah, then, what's Tefillah?
What do you mean?
Meaning Torah is the essence of Hashem, then what's Tefillah?
So Tefillah, he has a whole section on Tefillah. I hope I wet your palate. Baruch Hashem is a fascinating work. Take a look at what he says about Tefillah. Okay, you can even read the. I didn't say something clear when I did it Shana Aleph. I read it in English when I was in Shana Aleph. There's a great English translation. Some of you are like, "Well, that's a pretty major thing to leave out." A very beautiful translation by Rabbi Arya Kaplan. I read one or two pages in English every night before I went to sleep in English. Okay, we have 2 minutes, mamish. So we have to speak about Maseil Shasharim, because how can we not speak about Maseil Shasharim? And the Sefer Maseil Shasharim, so the Hakdama tells us that the entire Sefer is based on a Maimar Chazal of Rav Pinchas Ben Yair. Torah mivi lidei zehirus. Torah study brings you to zehirus. Zehirus brings to zrizus. Zrizus brings to nikiyus. Nikiyus brings to precious. Precious brings to tara. V'chule, v'chule, v'chule. What do you see right away? Why did he like this Maimar Chazal? It's very systematic. It's organized. This is a... We have four or five more minutes because I have a geschmack story to tell you. Yeah? We have 4 minutes? Okay. When I was in high school, the high school that I went to, Bachrim and Bachurot both were in the same building. Both were in the same school. Both were even in the same classes. So I remember there was a certain girl that I knew who I one day saw her sitting by her locker reading Maseil Shasharim. Now, she didn't usually, it wasn't like last week she was reading Chovos Levavos, the week before that. She didn't really read Svarim so often in school, sitting up against her locker. So I asked her why she was reading Maseil Shasharim. And she told me that she heard her father telling someone that if you read Maseil Shasharim from start to finish, so you get Ruach HaKodesh. So she really would like to see what Ruach HaKodesh is all about. So she wants to read the Sefer in order so she can have Ruach HaKodesh. What was that?
The Dovul was written on the ceiling after that.
So, if you take a look at the very end of the this quote from Rav Pinchas Ben Yair, what does it say? Kedusha maybe the Ruach HaKodesh. So it's the end of the Maamar Chazal. Now there actually is not a section called Ruach HaKodesh in Nisiyas HaSharim. There isn't a section called Ruach HaKodesh. But that's the very end, Tches HaMesim, of the Maamar Chazal. But this is a systematic approach to, so Shifa is a systematic approach to getting Ruach HaKodesh. It's a systematic approach, and I'm sure, I'm not doubting that if a person really goes through the steps of Zrizah, Sahiras, Chassidah, that they can be Zocha to Ruach HaKodesh. Obviously, you don't just read through the book once in order to get to that stage. But the point here is that there is a ladder here for elevating yourself in Avodas Hashem. You start here, you move to here, you move to here. We can't read it inside, but a very famous line, the very beginning of the Hakdama, he tells us that he's not going to tell us anything that we don't know. Now, that's probably not true, because there's a lot of things in the Sefer that we probably don't know. And even if you're a big Talmud Chacham, there are plenty of Maamari Chazal that he understands in a very unique way. But the Yesodos of what he's saying, he says you already know. But the problem is that in order for these things to penetrate and for you to really understand them, you need to constantly review them and go over them and go over them and go over them. And therefore he says, I'm just putting them out there in order so that you can understand them in a systemized and organized way. He tells us that actually, I think it's the Hakdama to Derech Hashem, that sometimes you come someplace and it's a jungle. Everything's all over the place. And you don't know where things are. And he says, therefore, you don't really accomplish. As opposed to when you come into a garden where, like, the roses are here and the daffodils are here, everything's organized. And that's what he says he's trying to do in his farm, to organize things. Because if not, and same thing with Avodas Hashem. You can hear a good schmooze and you can hear a good idea and a little eitz over here. But if you don't have a system for Avodas Hashem, so you're never going to grow. And therefore, he says his Sefer is a handbook for Avodas Hashem. And it really, really became that. The very first chapter, Chovas Ha'adam Be'olamo, just an interesting expression. Chovas Ha'adam Be'olamo. It's all of a sudden, it's our chova, this is our responsibility to do this. And he tells us there, I was told by someone when I was in Shalavim, and I was good to what he told me, that before you move on past Chovas Ha'adam Be'olamo, you have to read it 15 times. You have to read the first chapter 15 times before you're ready to move on to the rest of the Sefer. And I can tell you that by reading it 15 times, you really, really internalize the messages of it. And you know all the Maamari Chazal, and you understand how you see where he's going. And this is how he says to start learning Maseiach Sharm. You read Chovas Ha'adam Be'olamo 15 times. Now, whether you read it 15 times, you read it 12 times, or even if you read it one time, I really suggest everyone, Maseiach Sharm is one of those farm that you might have picked up at some point and say, wow, the Sefer doesn't really speak to me. I know I was like that. And then at a later point in my life, it spoke to me, and now I love reading it. It's like Lahavdil, it's like that movie that you love, and you don't mind watching it like 30 times. And you say, oh, actually, here comes this part, and you've already seen it like 30 times. But you love it so much. So Lahavdil Elof Havdolos, the Maseiach Sharm is a sefer that has become so chaviv to Klal Yisrael. So I really suggest that at least at some point, the Gra writes that in the first, I forgot how many chapters, he doesn't think that there's one extra, he's gone through it a dozen times, there isn't one extra word in up until Nikias, I think he says. So, we should all, I don't know what happened after that, I don't know what happened after that. But we should all make it our business to familiarize ourselves with some of the Ramchal Sfarim, and Bezos Hashem, I'm not sure who we're going to move on to next week, but Bezos Hashem, somebody else excited.